This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. It took a long time for the music world outside Czechoslovakia to take Antonín Dvořák seriously. Most critics considered him to be a composer for Pops concerts, friendly and colorful, but not someone who would be mentioned in the same breath as Brahms and Beethoven. Brahms himself would certainly have disagreed with that judgment. It was Brahms who took Dvořák under his wing, introduced him to his publisher, helped him get a series of government grants, and was always available to him with kindness and advice. But it wasn't until after World War II, 70 years after he wrote his Seventh Symphony, that the music world finally began to revise its opinion of Antonín Dvořák. Dvořák wrote his Seventh Symphony in December of 1884, after the enthusiastic response in England to his Sixth. He had also been inspired by Brahms' newest symphony, the Third, which Dvořák had traveled to Berlin to hear the previous January. Brahms had actually encouraged his friend to move beyond what he called the sunshine and blue skies of the Sixth Symphony and write something altogether different. For his part, Dvořák knew it would be. It was an emotional time for him. He was struggling with the recent deaths of his mother and his oldest child, and the soon-to-be fatal illness of his friend, composer Bedřich Smetana. There was also a lot of pressure on him to join the club and become an Austro-German composer like Brahms. But Dvořák was growing closer to the Bohemian independence movement, and he was ready to use his music to make a statement. In the summer of 1884, Dvořák had been elected an honorary member of the London Philharmonic Society, which had invited him to write a new symphony for the ceremonies. A few weeks later, Dvořák had taken his daily walk to the railway station in Prague to watch the trains come and go, when he said, "The first subject of my new symphony flashed into my mind on the arrival of the festive train bringing our countrymen from Pest." It turned out to be one of the trains bringing people to the National Theater in Prague for a benefit concert for the Czech independence movement, and Dvořák realized that his new symphony would be a reflection not only of his personal struggles, but the struggles of his countrymen as well. His struggles weren't over, though, not by a long shot. Even though he sketched out the first movement in 5 days and completed the symphony in just a couple of months. The premiere in London was a huge success, but Dvořák's publisher was again making things difficult for him. The publisher, Simrock, was the one recommended by Brahms, but whether it was out of bigotry against Bohemians or just sheer orneriness, he had never made things easy for Dvořák. This time around, he demanded first that Dvořák make a piano duet arrangement of the symphony. Then he refused to print Dvořák's name in its Czech form, insisting that the entire cover page had to be in German. He removed the dedication to the London Philharmonic Society and tried to undercut Dvořák on what the composer felt was a fair price for the work. Dvořák held fast, though, and in the end, his London Symphony turned out to be one of his most Czech. The first movement is all about struggle, with a theme as dark and undercover as Dvořák ever wrote. And before the violas and cellos even get to that idea, a low D in horns, drums, and basses has already done its work in defining the atmosphere. The movement's opening is filled with thematic ideas. Dvorak builds to a climax, withdraws briefly into a pastoral conversation between horn and oboe, then works up to an even more intense crisis. Eventually, settling into a new key, B-flat major, and clearing the skies with a wonderfully spacious melody. Conventionally, the movement would end its exposition with a repeat before moving into the development, and that's the way it sounds at first. Instead, the music bypasses the repeat and plunges directly into the development, pianissimo, but with great intensity. The development moves swiftly, covering a lot of territory, and Dvorak pulls everything back together for a compact and tightly woven recapitulation. Beginning almost in mid-paragraph, it's only as the coda dies away that the music begins to breathe at a more leisurely pace. The Adagio is among Dvorak's deepest slow movements. He wrote on the manuscript, "From the Sad Years." One reason Dvorak may not have been taken seriously for so long was that melodies seemed to pour out of him. As they say in the sports world, he made it look easy. And this symphony is no exception. The skies clear here for a moment as well. Dvorak wrote, "What is in my mind is love, God, and my country." This may be the most personal paragraph in the whole symphony, looking deep into Dvorak's heart. A repeated phrase with a melancholy falling interval in pianissimo strings, punctuated by pairs of soft chords for woodwinds and pizzicato strings. The scherzo features a melody in cross rhythms, the swinging theme in violins and violas falling into three broad beats per measure, while the cello and bassoon tune is in two. This part of the movement is all force and energy. The central trio section brings a pastoral contrast. It's a gentle tune in a major key with blurred outlines and textures. The trios in Dvorak's scherzos are usually picturesque in a folksy sort of way. This one is richly developed and extended, but it also functions as a moment of relaxation after the densely composed movements that precede it. And the coda reminds us that the context is still one of tragedy. Dvorak said that the finale represents the will of the Czech people to withstand their oppressors. It begins with an impassioned gesture. That leads immediately to a chorale. And then a confident major key tune for the cellos. The development is again wide-reaching, the recapitulation tightly constructed, and the powerful coda turns at last to a solemn close in D major. The journey of Dvorak's Seventh Symphony from composition to publication and from obscurity to concert hall standard mirrors the journey of the Czech people he loved so much. Shortly after beginning the work, he had written to a friend that, "Wherever I go, I think of nothing but my work, which must be capable of stirring the world, and God grant me that it will." End quote. It may have taken some time, as it did for his countrymen, but Dvorak's Symphony No. 7 continues to stir the world. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.